It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Allegheny County Department of Human Services is looking to create a home base downtown for young people under the age of 24 who are considered homeless. There is little doubt in the community that a need for such a shelter exists. A recent DHS report reveals the difficulty of tracking homeless young adults and ensuring their continual access to safe shelter. In the report, approximately 240 young people aged 18 through 24 were counted as living on the street, in abandoned buildings, or in shelters. I'm joined now in Studio A by Abigail Horn. She is a senior advisor for DHS, and she's here to talk about what the county is trying to do to address the problem. Abigail Horn, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
You say the number of homeless youth are likely to be higher than the official statistics. Explain what's happening here.
Sure. So every year, and we just did one at the end of January, the county does a point-in-time count in which we go out and we try and count all of the folks who may be living on the streets, as well as all of the people who are in our homeless shelters and transitional housing system. And so, for example, I don't have all the numbers for the one we just did in 2015, but in 2014, there were 129 youth being people 18 to 24, who were either living on the streets or living in emergency shelter or transitional housing in Allegheny County. Now, of those 129, only 9 of them were actually unsheltered, so living on the streets. The reason in the report why we think that number is undercounted is in part the character of who the youth are. And they oftentimes don't want to be counted. So if they are living in an abandoned building, it's much harder for our outreach teams to find them. They also tend to have more episodic versions of homelessness. So they may be living on a friend's couch for 2 weeks, and then it goes bad, and they end up on the streets for a few days until they figure out a different place to crash. And so they're much less likely to be counted within our point-in-time count.
Are we seeing this with kids who are in foster care, that they, for whatever reason, the arrangement's not working out, they end up leaving or they get kicked out of the home, and they may be on the streets or they may be in a situation where they're going from friend's house to friend's house or just crashing wherever they can?
So nationally, and it plays out locally, approximately 30% of homeless youth have had some experience in the foster care system. However, in Allegheny County, if it's a youth in the foster care system who is under 18, we will make every effort to make sure that they are still sheltered and taken care of by our child welfare system. So if they're
but we know kids fall through the cracks here. I mean, we know that you know, especially with foster homes, kids can end up with a great family, or they can end up with people who mean well and have the best of intentions, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. And we've talked to these kids, particularly those who've aged out of foster care, about their experiences, and many of them, we are told, live in fear, the fear that if they say the wrong thing, if they do the wrong thing, they're out on the street. They have they have this hanging over their head. So how much of that plays into what the overall picture we're talking about here?
I don't think in terms of the homeless youth on the streets, we're talking a lot about kids who are running away from a foster home. And in fact, what we are finding now in Pennsylvania, you can actually opt in at age 18 and stay in the child welfare system to age 21. And more, actually, our youth are opting to stay in the child welfare system because it is guaranteed housing and it comes with a lot of other supports, you know, covering education, books, and other needs and other supports. So, in fact, we're finding more and more youth are opting to stay in past 18. Rather than living, on their own at 18, which is hard when you don't have family support.
Sure. How do the numbers that we're seeing, how do they compare with the numbers of homeless young adults, say, 10 or even 20 years ago? Are we seeing more?
That's a good question. I don't know. And in many ways, we're interested in getting a better count. So part of our plans over the next year are to really dig deeper. And over the summer, we're planning a housing stability survey. And so it's not just looking at those who are strictly homeless and living on the streets or in our emergency shelters, but who may be doubled up with friends or who are pooling funds with some friends and staying in a motel from time to time. So we're going to try and do a much more in-depth look at the youth in Allegheny County to get a sense.
How will you do that? I mean, if you can't get at those numbers now, if you're having problems digging down and finding out what's really going on, what will change in the future that will enable you to do that?
It's by reaching to other places. So the point in time count, it's one night. It's the outreach teams who go, and they tend to go to the hot spots, and that's not where youth are. And so we've started a series of focus groups talking to the youth that we do know who are either staying in the shelters or who are using other support centers, and talking to them about how can we reach out to more youth and planning events, you know, where you offer some pizza and dig deeper. Draw them out, you know, offer food.
Well, that's probably one great way of doing that.
And we'll also be working with the schools as well, because they collect data on sort of the unstably housed. So they may be families that are doubled up, things like that.
Do they share that now with the county?
Yes.
Okay. If you have a comment or question for our guest, Abigail Horn of the Allegheny County Department of Human Services, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Have you or someone you know, perhaps a family member, experienced homelessness or is possibly homeless now? We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to have you share your experiences with us. There may be some ideas that you can share, some things that neither we nor the Allegheny County Department of Human Services has considered to this point. 412-246-2002, the number to call. We'd like to hear from you. What are some of the contributing factors as far as why so many young people are out on the streets? What is happening to young people now? Does the recession play into this somewhat? Is it a matter of economics that is making it difficult for kids to find places to live, or is there something else at work here?
Yeah, I'm not sure if things are changing per se. It's really mixed factors for why youth may end up on the streets. So it could be some are kicked out of their home. Some are runaways. They may be leaving a violent home. Sometimes it's an issue of substance abuse. Sometimes they could be victims of trafficking. Some have serious mental illness. So it's really it's a mix.
And, you know, we hear about just the numbers of people who are, for whatever reason, classified as mentally ill, falling through the cracks of the system, regardless of their age. Is that impacting young people? Are some kids who are having problems in this area maybe not being diagnosed or misdiagnosed, and because of that are not functioning in the traditional way that society might expect?
Well, I'm not an expert on mental illness.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that are you finding that there are, you know, situations where kids are not falling under this category, or that it's a problem that's not being addressed?
Sure. I mean, that's always an issue. Once we do identify a youth who may have serious mental illness, there are actually of really rich resources for us to be able to work with them, including permanent supportive housing. So actually, you sort of hear the opposite, I think, from some youth, in which they feel that, well, if I had a serious mental illness, then I would be provided with permanent supportive housing and all the supports I needed. But, without that, it's harder to access subsidized housing.
You mentioned transitional housing. That term came up earlier. Define what that is exactly, transitional housing.
Sure. So within the housing system, serving the homeless population, There is emergency shelter, which tends to be for 30 to 60 days. Some people only come in for a day or two. And then the next stage, sort of the next category, is transitional housing. And generally, you could stay for 2 years, and you'll be worked with really closely in terms of helping you overcome any of the barriers that you may face in terms of living independently in your own housing. And so that might be working on your, you know, workforce development issues or childcare, or it might be a substance abuse issue. So some of them are specific to subpopulations, like a transitional housing for folks who are in recovery. And then beyond that, there's actually permanent supportive housing, and that's for folks who have a chronic disability.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you'd like to take part in our conversation with Abigail Horn, Senior Advisor for the Department of Human Services, looking at the issue of homeless youth in Pittsburgh. And we'll be talking as we go further along in this conversation about the possible solutions that are being brought up to address this problem. Let's go to Jennifer in Pittsburgh. Jennifer, welcome. Thank you for joining the conversation. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to know, is this center that's being created solely for homeless youth? And will it house beds for those youth?
Good question. Abigail's nodding. What would your response be?
All right. So we haven't really touched on the center yet. We currently have an RFP, a request for proposals, out for a one-stop center that we're hoping will be centrally located to serve transition-age youth. And no, it's not at all just focused on homeless youth. It's a much broader population, and in fact, the majority of the youth that we're expecting to access the services at the center will be youth that have been within child welfare. So part of the program that we call our independent living services.
Thank you for that question, Jennifer. And we were getting a little ahead of ourselves here as far as getting to the part where we address what the county is doing to handle this problem. Let's talk about this this proposal for the downtown shelter for 18, primarily designed for 18 to 24-year-old homeless youth.
So, not quite.
All right, clarify.
Okay, so one, it's not a shelter. Sort of a shelter implies that it is a place to sleep. So it's not an emergency shelter. It is a we're calling it a one-stop center, or some folks have been referring to it as a drop-in center. But it would be a location where transition-age youth, age actually 16 to 24. 16 to 24 can come to receive a whole assortment of services. So the idea is actually they're really rich resources around the county and supports. Yeah, it's really hard if they're scattered all over the place. And so we want to have a center that first and foremost is welcoming to you so that youth want to spend time there. And once they come in the door and feel comfortable, we are going to be offering life skills. And so that's everything from learning how to shake hands and make eye contact and how to balance your checkbook. We will have classes in the arts and opportunities to do the arts, maybe a gym or other sorts of physical activities, as well as information on how to access housing, workforce development opportunities, education, how to apply to college, maybe GED classes. There'll be computers there. Potentially there will be some child care for those youth who are parenting, who have children.
The synopsis I've seen in the DHS report, it describes this as a full-time walk-in center where food, phones, laundry services, showers, computers, bathrooms, bus tickets, transportation would be available. You mentioned the exercise area, some of the other things. Mm-hmm. But there's no place – people can't sleep there?
Right. This is
Let's suppose somebody ducks in there in the middle of a snowstorm or a really cold night. They can only stay for so long, and then they have to leave. And then where do they go?
Well, there will be vans that can transport them to shelters. We do have emergency shelters.
Okay.
Where a youth can spend the night.
Let's go to Mark in Pittsburgh. Mark, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You are on with Abigail Horn.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to comment on my personal experiences. And I graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in 2008. And myself, like many people I've known that I've graduated with, you know, you were in the group of people that have good families, but our parents and our families do provide zero financial support for, you know, once we turn 18 and we get out of the house. So along those lines, there's many people that, you know, get through college, get a college degree, even a high, you know, a high technical degree that's sought after, but they end up living couch surfing for a number of years until they can find a real job, because you really can't pay rent with $10 an hour. And I just wanted to ask if for that subset of individuals, would they be able to take advantage of the shelter if, say, they were locked out of a friend's house and didn't have a couch to sleep on that evening?
And let me follow up with something here, Mark. I think that people who are graduating from college today, I mean, the job market is not the best, and they're finding, you know, you could be anywhere from 18 to 21 and just out of college with a degree and you know, finding themselves in the situation that you're describing. Have you experienced this, or do you know a lot of people who have?
Oh, yeah, just in my group of maybe, you know, 50 acquaintances that I've met throughout my time at Pitt, I mean, a good 5 to 10 people I know were in this situation where, you know, they stayed on my couch for, you know, a number of months just until they could find a real job.
So your question for Abigail then is what exactly?
Is people in this situation, are they able to take advantage of, I mean, when we're talking about homeless individuals, does this meet the definition?
Sure. So you're talking about accessing emergency shelter, correct?
Mark, okay. You still there?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you talking about accessing emergency shelter?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Sure. So anyone, even if you're a graduate of Pitt, can access emergency shelter if indeed you have nowhere to spend the night. Any day now, I'm not sure when it's being launched, we're actually going to have one coordinated intake process. So it'll be one phone number that you can call through the county in which to get a referral to a shelter that's hopefully near you. Again, it is designed for people who have nowhere else to sleep that night.
Okay.
Hopefully that answers your question, Mark.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Where is the financing for this coming from?
So it's going to be a mixture. The majority of the funding is from our independent living funding, again, because the majority of the youth that we will be serving will be those who have are either in or have been in the child welfare system. But there will be other funding as well.
Let's take a call from Rob in Pittsburgh. Rob, welcome to the show. You're on with Abigail Horn of the Department of Human Services in Allegheny County.
Yes, I just tuned in, and I heard the conversation about a center being opened in Pittsburgh to address, I guess, homeless needs, and I was just a little confused. I thought there was already a center like that established downtown in Pittsburgh for some time. Will this be an additional center?
This is a downtown center for youth aged 16 to 24.
Yes, I guess my question is, I thought there was already a center located in downtown. Would this be an additional center created, or how does that work?
So I'm not sure which center you're referring to. There are several different organizations that do offer services to homeless youth. There is a small community center in downtown that has been providing a drop-in location for homeless youth in the afternoons. But it's really small and cannot offer the sorts of resources and supports and classes that we are planning to provide within this center, which would be a much more comprehensive approach to serving the needs of homeless youth and other transition-age youth.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Rob, thank you. Thank you for that call, and let's go to Carlana in Pittsburgh. Carlana, welcome.
Yes. I'm calling to point out that this has been the coldest February that we've had in a long time. And also, with the climate change, it could become much more common that we have extreme weather. So maybe we have to start with a blank piece of paper and rethink the whole thing about what we do about homeless people. Because with some of these shelters, as I understand, they're put out in the morning, and they're supposed to make do with finding a place to be during the day. And I know some cities have developed more humane shelters for people to live in rather than the traditional shelters for homeless.
Yeah, well, so that, I mean, I think that's really a broader question than simply the youth. But staying focused on the youth, I think that's right. And so the center that we're talking about could really be serving that role during the day. It gives the youth somewhere to come during the day where they'll be able to have mentors and be nurtured and take advantage of the resources that we'll have and help sort of, you know, if they need to get their GED, they could get their work on getting their GED during the day. And so I think this absolutely addresses that daytime need.
That it's ultimately more about more than just a place to duck into and get warm or grab something to eat, that you're trying to pass on some life skills for people to maybe get out of the situation that they find themselves in, particularly if they have some formal education. It sounds like it's then simply a matter. Well, I guess none of this is simple, but a matter of creating some real life skills for people who, you know, may not know exactly what to do next.
That's right. You know,
when young people end up out on the streets, what kind of a life are they facing out there? It's got to be something that is very challenging and in some cases very rough and very dangerous. What do we know from the research? What does it tell us about what happens to the young people who end up out there?
Yeah, it's definitely a hard life. I mean, you can imagine many youth do end up using drugs and alcohol, and in often cases they might be exploited. So there's issues of sexual assault and sexual abuse and trafficking. And the longer you're on the streets, the worse your life outcomes look. And,
let's go to Vicky from Pittsburgh, who says that she has some experience with this. Vicky, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I'm really happy that I hear what you're talking about, to centralize this situation. I'm a grandma. I have my granddaughter started running out into the night at 15, and then by 16, she suffered from severe mental illness, bipolar. And she would literally just take off. Go missing, and they'd get her, and then they'd put her in so-called temporary shelter and other situations, and then she would run again. And what I found, it was just appalling, because this young lady had everything going for her, but she could not see the forest for the trees. She ended up being in abandoned buildings, in homeless shelters, being assaulted several times, exploited, trafficked. She actually, a 31-year-old man was, seen with her. And me and my daughter were tracing her through Facebook so that we could try to, get her somewhere to where she would, because she was underage and considered a runaway, the police could pick her up if we could get that together. And that did happen.
Well, Vicky,
took months.
It sounds like it took several months, and you went through a real nightmare.
Oh,
we appreciate your sharing that. And I guess we were talking about your granddaughter is 16, you said she was 16. So in this situation, Abigail, you've got this. How would this shelter that is being proposed for downtown Pittsburgh for 16 to 24, can it help in a situation like that? We're talking with one very concerned grandmother there.
Sure. So the center, part of that is trying to reunify youth with their families. So the center will have you know, that role, the family finding role of trying to make sure that youth are reconnected with their families. And you know, and the support. So behavioral health it would also be something that the staff of the center should be very aware of and working with youth to address whatever behavioral health, mental health issues
they might face. So those kinds of professionals would be on hand?
Right, either within the staff or if not on hand, then they would know how to connect youth. So it's a question of making those connections and making them as warm connections, right? Not just handing a phone number, but making sure that they're connected to the right people and really engage and connect.
Well, you would have to because what was just described to us doesn't sound like someone who would take the initiative if they were handed a phone number to just call and
what
they need to
yeah.
do. We were going a little over time here, but I do want to get in our last couple of callers, some people that really have some interesting things to bring up. Don in Pittsburgh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. My question is, I kind of understand what the transitional housing, but I work for Beyond Shelter in Los Angeles, and out there what they did was they found permanent housing and provided the homeless people with the supportive services. The state of Pennsylvania utilizes that model in terms of their low-income housing tax credit program, and I was also thinking about the utilization of set-aside housing and tax credit properties. You know, as a way of providing and Section 8 vouchers as a way of providing permanent housing for homeless youth.
What about what Don is saying, Abigail?
Yeah, no, that he's absolutely right. There's a real array, and all of those things are already in play in Allegheny County for sure. The one example that he started with model called rapid rehousing, in which instead of using transitional housing, a homeless person is worked with immediately to get them into an apartment that is at a rate that they're going to eventually be able to afford, and they're provided with rental assistance for a set period of time and provided with really strong supports, helping them find a job and so on, connecting to whatever services they need within that community. And that way they don't have to sort of be in a temporary situation, but rather in the home that will be their permanent home and build roots there. There are a variety of models of housing, and you know, clearly we have subsidized housing as well.
Quick final question from Andy in Shadyside. Not sure if we've addressed this, but go ahead, Andy.
I was wondering, along the lines of healthcare, are the nonprofits, the healthcare providers, the West Penn Alleghenies, the UPMCs of the city, are they reaching out and earning their nonprofit status? Are they helping out in any way?
It's a great question.
Sure. They do. There's a program called Healthcare for the Homeless that absolutely reaches out and works with the shelters and provides that sort of medical assistance.
Abigail Horn, and thank you for that call, Andy, by the way. Abigail Horn is a senior advisor for the Allegheny County Department of Human Services. Thank you so much for being with us today on Essential Pittsburgh to talk about the ways that the problem of homeless youth is being addressed in our city and county.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, it's not another hostel, but a cooperative homeless shelter. We'll hear about one man's idea to address the problem of youth homelessness. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We've been addressing the problem of homeless youth in Allegheny County, with statistics showing hundreds of young people aged 18 to 24 who are without homes, without shelter. We'd like now to introduce you to John Potter. He's the owner of what's said to be Pittsburgh's only hostel, who is trying to fund his next big project. It's a cooperatively owned house called the Pittsburgh Home. And he joins us now in Studio A, John Potter. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Explain what the Pittsburgh Home is.
So essentially, we're trying to start a different kind of homeless shelter, right? So we have a bunch of shelters, and they, you know, they do really good work. But we essentially want to buy a house and have it be multi-unit so we can have a separation of genders or even families. And then we're going to be running it out for $1 a year so they can actually have a lease, they can prove residency, and, you know, they can prove that they've had a landlord before to help them get off the street and get their own home eventually.
And you were listening to what we were talking about in the previous segment. So this could be, you know, people were bringing up that idea of, okay, well, there's this temporary, you know, one-stop place for people to go. But if they need a permanent housing arrangement, what do they do?
Exactly.
Sounds like this might be the solution.
I think so. Yeah, it's really like I said, the shelters are great, but there's something to be said about having, you know, there's a dignity in having your own home, and that's what we want to provide. It's not only dignity, but it's having an address that you can use to apply for jobs and get a bank account and get a driver's license. You know, it's actually having a home, I think, is what people need.
How does it work? How do people get in there? What do you expect from them? What what is the eligibility stipulation here?
Yeah, so obviously can't be doing drugs or, you know, addicted to alcohol. So we're gonna have a stringent interview process. But the only thing that we really need is that you're dedicated to getting off the street. So, you know, there's people who are habitually homeless, and I think everyone who's homeless gets lumped into that, and, you know, people aren't really sympathetic. But there's a lot of people who want to get off the street. You know, they're actively trying to, but the system kind of fails them. So as long as you're like trying to get a job or trying to go back to school or something to better yourself, then you can stay here.
So you have to be earnestly showing, indicating that you're interested. How do you do that? How do you make it clear? How does someone in this situation make it clear to you that, hey, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to transition out of here? I'm not looking at this as a long time solution, but just something to get me on my feet.
So with the hostel, it's primarily geared towards travelers, right? But I host a lot of homeless people too, and you can tell right away. I mean, it's kind of hard to put into words, but you can tell when people, you know, very adamantly want to get off the street. There's people who are very obviously just using it as a free place, and there are people who obviously are out there on the hustle every day trying to get a job, trying to get something to better themselves. So it's just a feel thing. You see them, and you can see that inside of them.
And forgive me for being skeptical, but I mean, how can you just tell? I mean, there doesn't seem to be a scientific approach here, which would possibly, you know, lead to a troublesome situation for you.
Yeah, I feel like if I had gone, you know, if I hadn't hosted 3,000 people just on, you know, I'd be like, when people want to stay, they send me their Facebook and I do a little background on them. So 3,000 people without incident, I feel like I have that, you know, I feel like I have that skill to be able to tell whether people are good or not. So it's hard to explain. I mean, I went to school for criminal justice, and I feel like I can kind of tell, you know, where people are at.
And what would make it a cooperative?
So essentially, right now we're crowdfunding a bunch of money to buy this house, and it's a bunch of people from the community. We have about 50 people from all walks of life. You know, we have people in the mental, you know, the mental health care business, and, you know, people who work with nonprofits, and it's a bunch of people coming together to try to build this.
What led you to come up with this concept?
So there was a story, I don't remember how long ago it was, but there was this guy, he owned a restaurant downtown, and for the life of me, I can't remember, but there was this guy sleeping out, you know, behind his restaurant every day, and he just got some money, and he got him a house, and after a year, this guy was living on his own and doing his own thing, and that really inspired me, and I wish I could remember what restaurant it was, but yeah, it's just like, that's all people need is a, you know, a gift sometime to, just to, you know, to better themselves, and that's what we want to provide.
Is there a business model here for you? I mean, you clearly seem to be someone who is doing this for altruistic reasons, but you have to survive too. You have to cover your costs. How will this work in terms of enabling you to do that?
Yeah. So the plan that we're going to do is get a multi-unit house. So, you know, three separate units, have the hostel in one, and the hostel has proven sustainable after 3 years. It pays for, you know, the rent on my current house. It pays for utilities. And essentially for the same cost of a mortgage, you know, for what I'm paying now in rent, I can get a multi-unit house. So the hostel is basically going to fund it, and anything else, you know, buying food for them or transportation costs, that's going to come out of my own personal finances.
We're talking with John Potter, who has come up with an idea for he's the owner of what's said to be Pittsburgh's only hostel, and he's trying to fund his next big project, which is a cooperatively owned house called the Pittsburgh Home. If you have a comment or question for him, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. Our email address, ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. What kind of approval do you need to do this? What sort of zone, when you come to the city, I'm assuming you're doing it right in the in within the city limits. So so when you come up against the zoning board or whoever it is that approves has to approve this, what sort of rules and regulations do you come into, and what sort of compliance do you have to achieve in order to get the approval for your idea?
Yeah. So the biggest compliance issue, there's a story about it recently. A lot of landlords in Oakland are stuffing too many people in one house, right?
That is something that has been discussed. We've discussed it here on the show.
Yeah. So basically, you're allowed to have three unrelated people in any, you know, single family dwelling household, right? So essentially, I'm getting two units, and then we're going to have three people in each unit to be in compliance with that. But essentially, it's not quite a shelter. It's more of a home. So since we're going to be renting it out, having a lease, it's really the same regulations as a landlord-tenant, you know, relationship. So it's a unique situation. It's not quite a shelter. We're not going for shelter status with the city. It is essentially just a home that I'm going to be renting out for nothing.
Years ago, in the 60s and 70s, you know, people used to talk about how in the future we'd redefine the concept of family. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's taken or if it ever would fully take. But does this concept of yours and how you arrived at this, does this at all dovetail with this philosophy of as we go forward into the brave future here, that we may redefine what, you know, what kinds of relationships we have, how we live together, especially with in a place like Pittsburgh where there is a housing shortage?
Yeah. I think the big problem is, like I said earlier, we just lump all the homeless in together, and we're not really empathetic to that. But if it was your dad or your mom or your grandparents on the street, you would go out there and you would get them a house, right? So why don't we treat other people that same way? Because they're not blood family? No, like you said, I think that everyone deserves to, you know, to be treated the same way, and that's what this is all about, is treating them like your brother, like your father, you know.
And again, when it comes to oversight, so then once, you know, if you're able to get this up and running, what sorts of, I mean, are there periodic inspections? Are there reports that you have to make? What is expected of you?
So definitely going to be on site. You know, I'm going to be living in the house. It's all going to be one unit. So definitely going to, you know, do inspections. There can't be any drugs or alcohol in the house. Yeah, but in terms of reporting to the city, like I said, it's really no different than a landlord-tenant situation. And I think that's the beauty of it, is not treating them like homeless, but real people, where, you know, the city really doesn't need to be involved.
And have you mentioned what neighborhood the house is in?
So the hostel that I currently run is in Lawrenceville, and I'm working with a realtor right now to find the best, you know, suited house for the project. I'm looking in like Stanton Heights right now, in East Liberty as well. So anywhere in the city I'd be happy with.
So, but you haven't necessarily set your sights on any one particular place yet?
I think my favorite one is in Regent Square. I'm actually going to see it on Sunday and hopefully putting in a bid for it.
412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation with John Potter. We have, I hope I have this name correct, it's Wienta from Pittsburgh. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Did I say your name correctly?
To your conversation with John. I just had a question for John about how he plans to provide services to these homeless people that he wants to house, if he's doing this alone, or if there are actually qualified professionals who he might be partnering with, or other outside organizations that he's consulting in order to really offer a comprehensive service to these homeless people so that they are actually transitioning out of this housing eventually.
Yeah, great question. So I don't know if you know what the website Reddit is, but there's a local forum for Pittsburgh. People go on and talk. So I posted it on there. I asked for help, and I got about 50 responses, serious responses from people who work in, you know, the mental health care industry, and people, you know, someone who works with Goodwill with their job placement, like their training sector. So a lot of people that are, you know, willing to help out and not only provide these people with a house, but the services they need to actually get off the street. So yes, so to answer their your question. There's a lot of people that are willing to help out, you know, with every aspect of, you know, helping them get off the street.
Thank you for that question. What about issues of accessibility? Does that figure into your plan?
What do you mean exactly?
In terms of people who might be physically challenged in some way, you know, being able to, you know, as you look around the city for a building, what kinds of thoughts have you given or consideration have you given to people who have certain individual needs?
Yeah. So I guess one of the big issues that I haven't touched on is a lot of shelters aren't handicap accessible, right? If you're in a wheelchair, it's hard to, you know, hard to find a shelter that works for you. So we're definitely planning, and I really want to make this handicap accessible so people, you know, it's not discriminatory in any way. And also pets, too. Everyone always, they don't think about that, but there are a lot of people who can't get into shelters because they have dogs. It's not really a disability, but, you know, it's a factor that can, you know, limit them from going into shelters.
That's a great idea. John Potter is the owner of Pittsburgh's only hostel, and he's trying to come up with a new project, trying to find a particular area for a shelter that he's calling a cooperatively owned house, the Pittsburgh Home. And we'll have a link to the Reddit post on our website at WESA.FM. John Potter, good luck to you. Thank you for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Coming up, Cozumel, Puerto Vallarta, Cancun, just a few of the sunny destinations south of the border. Travel contributor Elaine LaBalm has some suggestions for a holiday in Mexico when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. To quote the lyric from the James Taylor song Mexico, it sounds so simple, I just got to go. And with the outside temperatures as cold as they are, who wouldn't want to venture south of the border? Elaine LaBalm, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town, is with us this week with suggestions for a holiday in Mexico. And Elaine, it's always a holiday when you're here.
Well, thank you.
Welcome
and
back.
It is snowing outside, so let's go to Mexico.
I'm looking out the window. I don't see it.
It was
I'll take your word
when
for
I walked
it.
In.
I'll take your word for it. All right. You know, do you remember the dating game?
I do. Jim Lang, right?
Yeah, Jim Lang. And it seemed like every time, like every day or every other day, yes. The prize was, you're going to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Or Acapulco. At the time, people were still making a beeline to Acapulco, weren't they?
So, you know, I haven't heard Puerto Vallarta come up, you know, in any casual conversations lately. But you're saying that's a place you might want to go?
Well, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I actually did live in Puerto Vallarta for a time in 1989. This was, and the neat thing about Puerto Vallarta is that it is a town and a community unto itself. It's like 250,000 people who live there, so it's not just like a strip of, you know, beach hotels and, you know, tourist activities and things like that. It's a community, and of course, I lived in California before I went to Puerto Vallarta. So there's something of this like beeline almost shuttle people from California to Puerto Vallarta, but not just that. I mean, people from across the country will, you know, in the U.S. will go to Puerto Vallarta. It has a very friendly sort of vibe to it. It's still something of a spring break destination. You probably hear about that more on the West Coast than the East Coast, but there are a lot of compelling reasons to visit. Most of all, the people are friendly. Again, it's a community. I would suggest getting a condo in town, not necessarily staying on the beach in Puerto Vallarta, because you can easily get to the beaches. But the neat thing is, if you're there for, you know, a week, you will make friends when you're there. And what that means is you're likely to meet somebody who's sailed his boat down from, you know, L.A. or Northern California, and you'll go out on their boat, or you'll find someone and pick up a ride on a boat to get to an island like Jalapa, which is, you know, an hour away.
So you're convinced that things haven't changed since you were there in 1989.
I still am in touch with some folks who I knew at the time.
Someone who just took you out on your boat and now you're friends for life.
This actually did happen. Yes.
Well, okay, well, we'll
don't ask.
I'm not going to. But as far as the beaches, you know, because that's what people are into, how do they compare with, you know, if somebody wants to go to Florida or they want to go to the Caribbean or you know, wherever there's a beach, why should they go there?
Well, the thing is, the reason I'm saying Mexico now is because I did talk to my sister in Florida this week, and it was 40 degrees. And it's been very cold in the U.S. this winter. You want to get way, way south at this point. And I'm not saying that Florida isn't viable or the Caribbean, but the further south you get, I mean, I did check the temperatures in Cancun for the next week. We're talking mid to high 80s.
Yeah, you're happy to check out Cancun for any number of reasons, such as?
At the top of the list, I got to tell you, it's the most beautiful blue-green water I have ever seen. It's like an impressionist painter just put some brush strokes on the water. And they're a color that is almost hard to describe. You have to be there and you have to see it. And you immediately feel better when you see that beautiful, warm water. There's just something about the water.
Is that what makes it blue-green is the warmth, the temperature? I mean, because you go to a beach in Massachusetts, it can be 90 degrees out, and that water's just gray.
Well, that's true. And I remember that well. You know, I mean, I can't say.
It's just the Atlantic in general.
Well, you know, it's just, but yet there are other Atlantic beaches just that don't have that sort of, you know, azure quality. There's just something about it that makes it really special. But the thing is, it's kind of a one-stop shop when you go to Cancun, and that this is a beach with a lot of huge hotels on it. This is the land of the massive hotel pool. So you can just like plop yourself down in your hotel, and there's like going to be five restaurants in it and a spa and just, you know, all kinds of activities.
But if you're going to Cancun, I mean, you want to stay at the hotel? Don't you want to get down to that beach? And by the way, what color is the sand?
It's white. It's very white.
I knew it.
You know, they get a lot of hurricane activity around there, and they often have to dredge from, you know, farther offshore and then bring in ever more white sand and continuously widen the beaches and whatnot. I got to tell you, a lot of people will go there and plop themselves down at their hotel on the beach for a week and soak up the sun. And you know what?
If that's what you want.
And at the end of February, let me tell you, I'm hard-pressed to argue with these people after it's been like, you know, 0 degrees for how many days now?
Let's go to Cozumel. Beautiful beaches and also a prime location for divers.
Well, see, that's the great thing about
it. We're talking cliff diving?
Yeah. No, that's Acapulco, and I believe they still do that. Well. But the diving, you've got this the Great Maya Reef right off of Cozumel, the 600-mile-long reef that extends from Cozumel all the way into Central America. Again, that beautiful water, very clear water, lots of fish, aquatic life. It's absolutely a terrific destination for divers. But you don't have to be a diver. I mean, I just snorkel. I don't scuba dive. And there's a great water park as well that I've experienced in Cozumel called Chonka Knob, and you can snorkel and swim and do lots of other things in you know, more sheltered coves and bays and whatnot for those who aren't into diving but still want to see that beautiful sea life.
So you're saying it's a different experience than, say, going to Homestead to Sandcastle. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you said it, not me, Paul.
Well, no, I've been there. I love it.
It is different.
But
yeah.
But you're talking about snorkeling and doing some other things. You know, it's a sort of a different kind of concept for a water park, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Than the pedestrian concept that we have here.
There's one in Cozumel, and I'm sorry, in Cancun that I've experienced called Xel-Há. It's on the way to the Mayan ruins of Tulum. Same thing. There's these rivers and pools.
The Mayan ruins. That sounds
interesting. Let me tell you. There's some Mayan ruins in Cozumel as well as the ones, a couple hours west of Cancun in Tulum. And that's another, you know, thing you can I will admit, there have been times when I went to Cancun and didn't stray too far from my particular beach, but always try to get out to some of the Mayan ruins.
Where are those Aztec pyramids? Where are those?
Oh, ones? Mexico City. Okay. There are some Aztec pyramids
and
ruins.
That's kind of far from where we're talking about.
Yes,
it is. We have time to talk about one more place on the west coast of Mexico. It's I don't think I can properly pronounce it. I'll try. I'm going to take a stab. Huatulco?
That is very close. Huatulco, that H is silent. Oh. And this is, it's a beautiful area that I've spent some time on. It's set on 9 separate bays, the Bahías de Huatulco. You got about 35 separate white sand beaches. I kid you not. It's in the state of Oaxaca, so it's well south.
Oaxaca, there's a Oaxaca, Oaxaca. There's a city of Oaxaca.
And a Oaxaca state.
Is that the state?
Yes, this is in the state of Oaxaca on the coast. It's a huge state. And it was set to be the next sort of Cancun major development of tourism in the 80s, but it didn't quite get that big, and that's a good thing. It's still relatively uncrowded. Actually, a lot of coffee plantations used to be in Huatulco, but lots of good reasons to visit there.
All right. We'll take your word for it. Sounds like it would be a great place to be. Our travel contributor, Elaine LaBaume, on those Mexican destinations. Great to see you. Thanks.
Always good to see you.
We're out of time. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.